Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. My guest today has helped us better understand the workings of the human brain. Psychiatrist Dr. John Rady has been well known for his work on attention deficit disorder, or ADD-ADHD, for many years. His three books, Driven Distraction, Answers to Distraction, and Delivered from Distractions, have long been considered seminal works on the subject. In recent years, though, he's written to explain brain function in general, the user's guide to the brain, and more specifically, how exercise positively affects brain plasticity and function. His most recent book is titled Spark, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain. Rady is an associate clinical professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School and is a specialist and written over 60 peer-reviewed articles on the topics of aggression, autism, ADHD, and other issues in neuropsychiatry. He'll be appearing at the Holland Hall Schools Sunday evening at 7 o'clock at the Walter Art Center in a lecture free to the public on the effects of exercise on brain function. Dr. John Rady is my guest today on Studio Tulsa. Dr. John Rady, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
I was interested, as you began looking at brain health, really this came about through your work in studying and writing about ADHD. How did that happen?
Well, way back in the late 70s, early 80s, here in Boston, we were transfixed with the Boston Marathon, and I had a patient who was a marathoner who had to stop because of a knee injury. And he appeared first with a depression, but then showed signs of adult attention deficit disorder, which had not been defined before or thought about in adults before that time. And he couldn't get anything done. And this was a fellow who was both a professor at MIT and at Harvard and had always been a runner. And he was in the psychology field, so he knew about ADD and thought that he had all the signs and symptoms and came in to see me because I'd been talking about it. And sure enough, he had it and responded well to a slight dose of medicine until he could get back running again and went back and continued to do his scholarly work and teaching and all of that. And so this turned the light bulb on in my head, and I began to see it a lot as we began on our course of looking at people with attention deficit disorder and seeing that a lot of them had self-medicated with exercise. That is, that they would run in the morning or exercise in whenever they could, or and then after that bout of exercise, they were better focused. They could pay attention. They could sit through meetings. They could stay with an argument. They were better. And then a number of them, if they exercised in the morning, by noon, they had already known to put their heavy sledding schedule early. And then after lunch, when the exercise effects wore off, they either had to exercise again or they were in outer space thinking about whatever and having a hard time focusing. And these were very successful people. So this led me to think about exercise as a treatment for ADD. And we, Ned Hallowell and I, wrote three books on the subject and always talked about the benefits of exercise for attention deficit disorder. And I think today we're finding that it really occurs, and not only for those who have it, but for all of us in terms of improving our attention and our focus.
Take us back to that. I mean, the idea that, you know, you have a person who is apparently experiencing adult onset of ADHD, that seems unusual on the face of it. Maybe it's not so unusual, but it seems unusual. How did you come up with this idea of, you know, I guess in seeing what their case history was, what have you changed? They said, I'm not exercising anymore. Was it that simple?
It was. He came in with that in mind. He was a very, very brilliant fellow, had won all kinds of awards and written all kinds of books and variety of subjects, and really had it in his mind that this was what was going on. And so I began to then look at it and think about it with other patients and got quickly confirmed, and as well as seeing it, what happened when I exercised in terms of my own case of ADD, for what it's worth. And also, we were beginning to unravel what exercise did for our brains in animals, knew that it raised the level of dopamine and norepinephrine. Back in those days, those were the major neurotransmitters we worried about, for certainly for attention was still the focus, but also for mood disorders. And we knew from afar that exercise was a useful treatment for depression, anxiety, and all these things that were sort of, you know, home remedies, if you will, then in that era for depression. Hippocrates, in 2,000 years ago, had written that when people come in with a bad mood or bad humors, his advice was to go for a long walk. If they came back and they still were depressed, he'd have them walk again. In other words, to get them moving, because this made their mood better. And so this led to, eventually, to my being very much involved with understanding what exercise did. And, of course, now we know one heck of a lot more about it in terms of its effect in the brain.
So what is it actually doing in the brain when you exercise? You know, dopamine, epinephrine, and all that, we know that, those are the chemicals that are often released through running. It's a feeling of pleasure. It's a feeling of that sort of satisfaction that sometimes when you finish exercising. But what actually happens in the brain?
Well, what happens is this. Our brain evolved to make us be better movers. In other words, the biggest part of our human evolved brain, which evolved over 500,000 years as hunter-gatherers, evolved to help us be more precise, more definitive, waste less energy, remember where things are at and how to do things. All those nerves were added on as we evolved and got better at adapting to new environments. And these are the same cells that are activated when we move. So the biggest way of activating the brain is for us to move. Because we're using more of our 100 billion nerve cells than in any other activity, all through the brain, and especially in the front part of our brain, the part of the brain that we acquired later in as we evolved, to help us be thoughtful, to help us be less impulsive and stay directed and more focused. And this is the part that always gets turned on when we exercise.
I'm going to go out on a limb here, but when you talk about this evolutionary, is it a matter of the best hunter-gatherers are given the most brains to sustain the species, maybe?
Well, that would be one way of looking at it, but I think the whole species evolved, you know, that we all became better at thinking, because now our thinking brain is the internalization of our moving brain. That they're the same nerve cells that we evolved to move better. We co-opted them and are using them to do our thinking. So it's not just the best, it's all the whole tribe, if you will, the whole species evolved. Uh-huh. And what happens when we use our brain cells is we release chemicals, and that's the magic. We release dopamine, norepinephrine, serotonin. We make endorphins and endocannabinoids, which is another feel-good anti-pain hormone like the endorphins. And we make another factor, a brain growth factor or fertilizer called BDNF, or brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And we make more of that when we exercise than in any other activity, than when we're thinking, when we're learning, which we also make this stuff because we're using more brain. But nothing comes close to the amount of BDNF that we make when we're exercising. And this has been a very powerful driver of all the research that's been done in the past 15 years on exercise and its effect on the brain.
I understand BDNF is one of the substances, or I don't even know if it's a substance or a transmitter so much, as it's something that we really look seriously when we're looking at aging's effects, Alzheimer's, dementia, and the like. Is that correct?
Yes, well, that's where it all started. That's where the excitement started in the mid-90s, when we learned that exercise promoted higher doses, higher concentration of this. It's a hormone, a BDNF. It's made by every brain cell when we use it. So the more we use our brain, the more we make this stuff, which helps preserve our brain, helps us deal with stress, is an antidepressant, an anti-anxiety agent, helps us deal with cravings and substance abuse, and really helps us grow brain cells, the growth of the 100 billion cells that we have, preserve them, keep them healthy, as well as foster the growth of brand new brain cells.
My guest today is Dr. John Rady. He is the author of SPARK, The Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain. He has written a number of books, including three major books on ADD and ADHD, Driven to Distraction, Answers to Distraction, and Delivered from Distraction. And he'll be speaking Sunday evening at 7 o'clock at the Walter Arts Center at Holland Hall in a free lecture talking about this link between exercise and brain health. Now, what's really interesting to me, Dr. Rady, is how from looking at exercise as a therapy in ADHD or ADD or depression or the like, how did we get to this idea that exercise is a stimulant of brain growth for children, for example, or in keeping, you know, our faculties sharper longer as we age? It sounds like some of that was Alzheimer's research. And I know there have been some really exciting studies where exercise is put into a major part of the school day, and you're seeing some amazing returns. You used the example of a school in Naperville, Illinois. What did you find there?
Amazing place. Everybody who goes to Naperville District 203 comes away wishing that they were young again and going to school at this school. Are these schools. It's a whole group of schools that have adopted this program and evolved it over now almost 30 years. An everyday physical education program that's based on physical fitness. I got wind of it in 2003 when they were in the national media, and they had at that point 3% of their children, 19,000 children in a school district, 3% were overweight. And there were no obese kids in the 7,500 kids in the senior high school.
Wow.
So something was happening. Something was happening because the average then was 33% of our kids were overweight. They had 3%. Then they also, some years before that, had enlisted and took the International Science and Math Test, which the U.S. and other countries take every 3 years. They took it as a country. The U.S. usually comes in the low teens. They came in number one in the world in science and number six in math. That got me on an airplane to Naperville and was the germ that solidified my passion for writing the book and for becoming a missionary for this idea. It was incredible. It is amazing, and it's all that I say it is. They're very active, motivated kids that are always paying attention to how much they move. They devised a brilliant plan to grade them by having them be in their cardiac training zone, by everybody having their own heart rate monitor to make sure they were in that training zone for a certain percentage of the week that they were in physical education, and they have it every day. And it is a program that's been copied by a number of schools who find the same kind of success, that the kids are much more fit, much better students. The thing we see first is a drop in discipline problems. When we go into the inner city or to underprivileged areas, discipline drops off almost immediately, or discipline problems. And then the kids are much better able to sit and learn or stand and learn or whatever they're going to be doing. And then you see grades go up eventually, but certainly test scores. And this has been documented now by so many different areas. The Institute of Medicine committee just came out and wrote a report saying that every school should have PE every day, not just because it makes sense for our health crisis that we're in the midst of, but to raise test scores.
Yeah.
Because that's the obsession we're all obsessed with today. And it's not just a program, a learning program. This is a program that makes the learner a better learner. So you have more brain involved in the whole process because it deals with motivation, anxiety, frustration, focus. It helps people, kids, adults, do better, use their brain optimally.
That's really interesting because you're seeing this research at a time when a lot of schools feel the stress to eliminate recesses, to eliminate PE, or to downgrade it significantly. And it sounds like this is absolutely something that a school should encourage and probably in a systematic way at the very beginning of the day to help for better functioning in the classroom. And yet the trend seems to be the opposite, to eliminate recess, to reduce the amount of time spent in PE. What you're suggesting is exactly the opposite. It's more helpful.
Exactly. And it's working in conjunction with Reebok and started a program called BOKS, B-O-K-S. That's a before-school program, voluntary, for the elementary school kids from K through 4, 3 to 5 days a week, where they come in an hour before school starts, and they play vigorous games. The whole curriculum has evolved, but it's now in 500 schools, won awards from Michelle Obama and Let's Move and Healthy Partnership for Healthy America and all the other agencies because it's been very successful. It's mainly run by volunteers where you can get them, and the kids love it. And now the big criteria there is, it's really significant, is that they looked at the first 1,500 kids that did the BOKS program after the first semester and canvassed them, and they found that 96% of them wanted to do it again. Now, think about that. They had to get up an hour earlier to get to school, an hour earlier to play. Vigorous play, you mentioned recess. Well, this is where all the kids are running and playing and doing squats and jumps and having fun doing it. And it gets them prepared for the day. The teachers love it. The parents love it. The kids love it. So it's something that we're you know, various programs are trying to reintroduce either before school, after school, or during the school day, which would make the most sense because there's such a big bang for your buck from the amount of time you spend getting your heart rate up, getting your brain active, using more of your brain cells, preparing those cells to take in information. It's not that we tire those cells out. We just prepare them to do what they're supposed to do when we want to learn and understand something.
Now, I've heard you talk about some schools where it's at the very beginning of the day and they're rotating throughout a variety of stations. Maybe they're in the gym one day, maybe they're outdoors another day, but it's a systematic approach before the school day starts. That sounds like that's a, if this brain research is correct, that sounds like a no-brainer, it sounds like a no-brainer for starting the day, getting kids exercise so they're ready to learn. Can you talk about that particular school? Because I think you've said in various talks that it was very systematic right at the very beginning of the day, where a lot of times PE is all throughout the day. Well, it doesn't do you any good at the end of the school day. It seems like it would make sense to do it at the beginning.
Right. I think you get more action if you do it at the beginning of the day. And basically there are a couple of schools that come to mind that started at a before school program or first period program, especially a school in Charleston, South Carolina. Very underprivileged area, all the kids on breakfast and lunch assist programs. And they came in and had 35 minutes of going from station to station, one playing basketball, the next doing double dutch jump rope, and the next doing pogo stick, then some of the Dance Dance Revolution, which is a video game kind of exercise added video game, and which is very popular, and they would spend 8 minutes at each station, and then the whistle would blow and they would move to the next station, and eventually they became very into it and loved it. And what they found was, after the first semester, that there was an 83% drop in disciplinary referrals or disciplinary problems from one semester, the year they started, compared to the previous year. And as well, you saw an improvement in teacher satisfaction, student satisfaction, an improvement in credits earned, an improvement in attendance, which often happens, that you see attendance, kids wanting to come to school because they want to run and play first. It's not just recess. It's a pretty structured physical education program that focuses on play, which is the beginning of exercise and getting yourself fit.
Well, what do you say to schools and teachers that say, you know, we just don't think we have time for PE because of all the test challenges and the like? I know some schools, you know, they'll cut down recess at times. Is that counterproductive in your mind?
Oh, it is. I think it definitely is. And I think PE has to be a fitness-based program, not just teaching sports. Sports are great if everybody's playing all the time. The idea is to really get the kids moving and keep them moving. PE, for many people, are memories of shame and humiliation. But the business at Naperville and schools like that, it's for everybody. And everybody's involved every day, and they're moving and have to stay moving. And then you get all the kids going. And what you're seeing is an improvement in learning capacity and attention. And so there's lots of studies out there, one by the Center for Disease Control, that looked at 50 schools that cut time from their sit-down classes and put it into more physical education so that they had a daily program. They found that of the 50 schools, 25 of those schools had a rise in test scores. 24 of the remaining 25 didn't raise to statistical significance, but didn't fall, and only one fell. So the conclusion from that was that by taking time away from regular classroom work time and putting it into PE, you actually improve test scores in half the schools, and the other half, all you did is make them a little more healthy, or at least that's the conclusion.
Well, I like the idea of putting as much focus in PE as you would in any other class, and make sure, you know, because I remember some of my PE classes, it was the kids that were sort of jocks, if you will, who were, you know, enthusiastically participating, and the rest of the class is like sitting in the bleachers. And it sounds like you really have to have full participation to get the benefits for everybody in the class.
Oh, absolutely. And that's been the problem for ages, you know, that the jocks would always get the better grades, and they would participate and dominate. And what you want is, especially those kids that are unfit, to be involved. The jocks you don't have to worry about. Yeah. But when they're wearing heart rate monitors, the jocks have to work just as hard as the unfit kids to get their good grades.
Yeah, indeed.
Because it's a matter of getting better. Yeah.
Well, in our last couple of minutes, let's talk about towards the end of life and when athletic movement becomes more difficult. What are some easy things you can do to exercise to get, again, the benefits of this brain health when you're in your 70s or in your early 80s, as far as safe ways in which to exercise and get the benefits?
Well, I think walking is the primary way of doing that. Standing rather than sitting. We have a saying that sitting is the new smoking. that is, we know that sitting causes a lot of healthcare risk attached to it, so we're encouraging people to stand and to be moving. And in the elderly, you want to do that, and you want them interested in activities that involve moving, and hopefully with the group, because there's more bang for your buck when you're moving with people. So something like line dancing or ballroom dancing or yoga, tai chi, those other movement activities that you can do together. I'm the one of the favorites is Zumba these days, Zumba Gold, to get these people coming back to move in rhythm and to have fun. That's the key ingredient that people often miss, having fun.
Do you think fun is a, I mean, it's kind of hard to measure for something like that, but do you think the fun of the physical activity is just the fun element is contributing as much as perhaps the heart rate and the muscle movement?
I think it certainly we know that you get, if you're doing the exercise voluntarily, whether or not it's fun, is much better than being forced to do it. But the hope is that if you're forced to do it because that's the standard, that eventually they'll have fun doing it. And I think it does contribute a lot, but it's like, and then exercising outside contributes even more. We say that exercising outside is like the benefits squared. You get the good air, the nature. You're not inside. You're moving as we once moved as hunter-gatherers. So there's a lot of ways and a lot of things that can be attempted and continued, which is the biggest problem with exercise, is to continue the plan. Now, just as you're talking about the elderly, well, the Mayo Clinic just reviewed last year 1,600 papers on the effect of exercise and cognition, looking at preventing the onset of cognitive decline in Alzheimer's disease. And they came up with the finding that it was universally positive in preventing the onset of cognitive decline. And some studies show that if you begin exercising 3 days a week and stay with it, that you will push back cognitive decline by as much as 10 to 15 years. And some Alzheimer's study centers find that if they get people exercising and keep them at it compared to those who don't, that they will can cut the risk of Alzheimer's disease in half. And this is one of the areas that we focus on a lot because people are afraid of losing their minds. And exercise is certainly one great way to keep your mind going.
The name of the book is Spark, the Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain. We look forward to your appearance, Dr. Rady. John Rady, thanks very much for joining us.
Yes, well, thanks. I look forward to coming to Tulsa.
Dr. John Rady is an associate clinical professor of psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School. His most recent book is titled Spark, the Revolutionary New Science of Exercise and the Brain, which was published back in 2008. He'll be speaking Sunday evening at 7 o'clock at the Walter Art Center at Holland Hall in a free lecture on the effect of exercise in the brain. He's also author of a forthcoming book titled Go Wild, which will examine our genetic roots and its influence on our psychology in a modern world. That's scheduled to be published next spring. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.